Hello and welcome to Don't Pee on Your Leg and Other Scientific Misconceptions, where every week we discuss some scientific misconceptions with the hope that you learn something new about the world. I'm here with my co-host, Margaret Flavortown Hanslick-Burton.
And I'm here with my co-host, Camden Lambchop Hanslick-Burton.
Welcome to the show. First segment every week is where we share something that we are excited about. I'll go first since Margaret is graciously pointing to me. We went on a fun and maybe not so planned trip to Idaho over the weekend. We had initially planned to go to the Oregon coast for fun and looking at sea life, and as folks who are listening right now may know, the Western United States is dealing with a very big and concerning wildfire situation. And the aftermath of that is a lot of smoke. So we went to Idaho to try to escape the smoke on the other side.
Yep. Didn't work.
Did not work. Very hazardous air quality. So we spent a lot of fun time indoors playing indoor board games and, you know, just having a good time, hanging out with some friends that we had quarantined with ahead of time, and our favorite pup of the podcast, one of our favorite pod pups, Harvey, and it was a great time.
Yeah, we definitely made the best of it. Invented games and just hung out and talked, and yeah, it was fun, even though it was absolutely not what we had thought it was going to be.
No, not at all. Margaret, what are you excited about?
Okay, so I've been thinking a lot about the fires that are going on, and there are so many complexities to this. I've been thinking a lot about how, you know, people say like, oh, 2020, it's a curse. No, it's not. It's the kind of like coming to a head, all of these things all at once, injustice, environmental issues that our government refuses to address, our failing school systems, like all of these things are coming to a head. It's not a curse. It's like, of course this is happening.
Yeah.
Like, it sucks to say the least, but it makes sense because these systems have not been supported and they're failing. So I've been trying to look for like signs of hope in this. And I've been thinking about the firefighters in California and all over the West Coast and in other parts of the country. And our listeners might not know this, but many of them are people who are in prison, and they are asked sometimes to fight these fires. And the issue with that is that they are told to fight these fires, and then they aren't allowed to become firefighters when they leave prison. So you expect them to do this thing, and they're qualified apparently enough to do this, to fight fires when they're out there. But then when they want to get paid an actual living wage to do this job, this very dangerous job, they're told, nope, you are in prison. It's a no-go. So I am excited because I learned that according to NPR, there is a new bill that's being introduced by the governor of California, Gavin Newsom. He signed it recently that would allow people who had been in prison who fought fires to have their records, quote, expunged, clearing the path for them to be eligible for firefighting jobs upon release.
Great.
So I'm really excited about that. It hasn't passed completely yet, but you can find out more about it if you Google that. But it's that kind of system that needs reformed all over the country. The idea that you've, quote unquote, done your time, but you're punished for the rest of your life.
Right.
So
much of our country, I think, is founded on second chances, and yet there's a lot of people who are not afforded a second chance.
Exactly. So that's what I'm excited about, but that's what I'm also thinking a lot about recently, is how all these systems overlap and what we can do to make them better and better serve everyone, like truly everyone. So,
well, thanks, Margaret.
Yeah.
That is something that a small thing to be excited about, and hopefully that keeps moving forward. So we're going to head into our segment. I'll just call it a segment now.
Yeah.
It's probably not newish anymore.
No, I think it's been, what, four times maybe now?
Maybe.
Less? Three? Anyway. Yeah. No, not new.
It is called What Is That Sound? Margaret, cue the theme music.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. What is the sound that I'm hearing for you?
Okay, great. So, in our segment called What Is That Sound? We keep the spirit of the show, meaning that one of us researches something the other one doesn't know about, except here it is a sound, and I'm going to play it. And Margaret, you have to tell me what you think it is.
Okay.
I'll give you a hint, depending on how you do the first time around.
Okay, that sounded very oceanic to me.
Okay.
That's
why I held up on the hint. That was going to be my hint.
Yeah, and then I thought I heard like two like bloop, bloop bubbles.
Yep, those are the interesting thing to be listening to here.
Things. Yeah, can I hear it one more time?
You are hearing some like underwater stuff.
Yeah.
This was inspired by friend of the pod, my mom, who sent us an article about spinner dolphins.
Are you giving it away?
No, because this led me to a link that was very unrelated to this. Oh. The only theme is that ocean.
Oh, okay. All right.
So I have not given anything away.
Let's hear it one more time, please. So there's like a big like bloop, and then there's like a kind of sound.
The bloop is the interesting part here.
Is it a mammal?
This time, it is not an animal causing it.
Really? I want to guess.
Go for it.
Is it an underwater vent?
Oh, we're getting close.
You can tell me.
So in 1997, researchers, and this is through NOAA, discovered this weird sound using underwater microphones. And they were very confused why they were hearing it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, in the late 90s and early 2000s, of theories of, oh, it's a underwater sea creature. It's a giant jellyfish. It's a giant squid. All of these things. And come to find out, they were able to recreate it and time it with icebergs breaking. Which is very interesting, because I think we are used to the above ground cracking sound.
Yeah.
This is an underwater earthquake that led to a iceberg breaking off.
Wow.
Of course, the sad end to that, right, is that the sound is becoming more common underwater due to global warming. Vote to fight for climate change, or to fight against climate change,
for the environment.
To help the environment.
Yeah. The registration deadlines are coming up. Mm-hmm. In a lot of states. So please, Google, make sure that you are registered to vote, and vote for people who want the earth to last.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be a crazy idea, but it seems that way.
Yeah. And it probably isn't too hard to figure out who does want the earth to last.
I'm going to go ahead and say vote for Biden, y'all.
Oh, is this our official endorsement?
I don't think he's asked for one, but sure.
All right, here on this.
Biden-Harris 2020, y'all. It's critical. It's critical. Oh, didn't you send me something about the Scientific American?
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead. Great. No, it's a great point.
We're getting off on a tangent.
The Scientific American, for the first time in 175 years of its existence as a journal, has endorsed a presidential candidate. Think about that. A journal organization devoted to science has always stayed away from being what people would think is political. Mm-hmm. It can't ignore it for the very reasons we're discussing. It is clear who is pro-science, who is pro-environment. You can know it through the 200,000, almost nearly 200,000 people who have died in America through the coronavirus, through the inaction against climate change, through continued things that are anti-environment.
Anti-environmental regulation.
Yep. Vote for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. It is the right thing to do for our planet.
Yes, it is. But really great sound. You tricked me with that spinner dolphin.
Well, that's why I held up for a second, because I didn't want to like throw you in a different direction.
You tricked me. Okay, but I loved it. Great job.
You didn't know it was underwater right away. Would have been impressed. Sure. Oh, it was, also was fun. It was called the Bloop. Across NOAA and the scientific community, it was known as the Bloop.
This now sounds familiar.
So if you Google like the Bloop Ocean, it is like the thing that people talk about. And if you find a very old article, people will say it's still undiscovered. They've figured out what it is.
Discovered.
All right. Well, Margaret, let's head into our main segment of the show, the misconceptions. Every week, we each bring a new scientific misconception to share, explain, and discuss. As a note, each co-host researches their misconception on their own and brings it to the podcast. The other co-hosts have not heard of it or don't know much of the science behind it. This primarily is to make this feel more like a discussion where the other person doesn't have to feel like they need to be prepared or be quizzed, and they can just learn alongside you, the listener. Margaret, we need a random way to choose who goes first, as always.
Okay, I'm going to hold...
Margaret is grabbing a lot of things that I'm afraid are going to go flying as she tries to flip something.
Okay, wait. I found it. I know what to do.
That is a ceramic lamp. Oh, I see.
No. Okay, so I have a matchbook in my hand. Close your eyes, and you're going to guess which hand it's in.
ASMR. Okay.
Okay.
Left.
Nope, it's in the right. I get to go first.
I bet you switched it when
no,
I said
No, I did
that.
Not. I did not.
All right, Margaret, you get to go first.
I'm integrous. Okay. So I get to go first. And this misconception was brought to you by Camden's dad. And it's a really good one because I did not know about it, really. Like, it has to do with something that I encounter a lot, that most people encounter a lot, but hadn't really given it much thought. So thanks, Charles. Aluminium, or aluminum, as we say in the States, or tinfoil, as we sometimes also say. It's not really made of tin.
Or metal saran wrap, as no one has ever called it until right now.
It has two sides.
Yep.
What are the sides like, Camden?
One is very shiny, and one is not so shiny.
One is not so shiny, but still we can agree...
Sheeny.
Fairly shiny.
Yeah, it's got a sheen to it.
Yes, but in comparison, no, it is fairly dull in comparison. So those are the two sides. There's a misconception out there, and it's not necessarily consistent, but some folks say like, oh, you gotta put the foil shiny side out. That's better for reflecting light and making the food crispier. Some people say, no, no, no. You've got to bake with the dull side out because it will create a more even bake.
Oh, right.
Great British Bake Off, by the way, coming back to Netflix starting September 25th. Not a sponsor, just a fan. So that's what people say. They have some people have strong opinions about like which side you should have out, depending on what you're doing.
I've heard this. In fact, my dad texted us, which is where we got this.
Here's the thing.
Oh, no.
It doesn't matter.
Oh, no.
No, it's okay.
Oh.
You're all right.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. That makes me feel free, you know, to do whichever side you prefer. It doesn't matter if you bake with or cook with the dull or shiny side out. There's no difference between the two sides when it comes to their effectiveness at... cooking, heating things up, making things crispy, doesn't matter.
So is this like a optical illusion? Because
no.
I bet, wouldn't people think it looks shiny and one looks less shiny?
No, it definitely does. That's not an illusion. That there is a shiny side and there is a dull side.
Okay.
But it's really the material that matters more.
Oh, okay.
The dull and the shiny sides are just a result of how the foil's made. Oh, let me first quote my sources. So Huffington Post article by Julie R. Thompson, the How It's Made TV show on YouTube.
Favorite show.
And then the Reddit thread channel?
Old feed? Woman.
What do you call it?
The Reddit feed.
The Reddit, the subreddit?
Yeah.
Is that good? Called Explain It to Me Like I'm Five.
Which is a great subreddit. I've gone there many times, even as a science teacher, to remember how things
work. It just helps. Yeah. I will say the one I looked at, it was explaining it to me like I was at least 13, but it's okay. Anyway, so
a five-year-old who knows some physics.
Who has a really pretty decent understanding of some concepts. So the two sides are caused because of how it's made, which we'll get into that right now. So if you've ever wondered, how is aluminum foil made?
I have.
Then you might enjoy the TV show How It's Made.
And I do.
So the whole process involves basically like gradually thinning and crushing these huge blocks of aluminum called ingots.
That's fun. A beautiful name for a child.
For a child, ingot.
Ingot.
They're melted in a furnace. They're melted at 750 degrees Celsius, which I learned is the same. What?
That's hot.
It's hot. It's hot because that's 1,382 degrees Fahrenheit.
Also hot.
Also very hot because they're the same temperature. But centigrade is just an old-fashioned way of saying Celsius.
So if you're feeling fancy.
If you're feeling fancy and old-fashioned, which I often am, you can say centigrade. So it's heated up. It's cooled down. Then it's heated up again. Oh, they shave down the metal a little bit. They use this equipment called decrusting knives, well, I learned, which is really unpleasant sounding.
Yeah, I don't think we needed to hear that.
Sorry. Well, I needed to share it, to share this burden. Decrusting knives. So these huge sheets, again, heated up, cooled down, crushed, thinned out. Eventually,
that must be a lot of crushing because you said it's a giant aluminum block.
Yeah.
And I don't, not to blow anyone's mind, but they aren't aluminum blocks once we get them.
That's correct. At least if you're doing it right. Yeah. But they are eventually getting thinner and thinner on a large roll. And once they get it real thin, there's a risk that the sheet could break when it's like continually pulled apart.
Yeah, I've done that. I've definitely broken.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Aluminum foil just by pulling on it.
Right. So when it's getting thinned down, they don't want it to break because that would kind of ruin the whole roll. So they double it up, basically. So that's why you get...
They fold it on itself?
They fold it on itself. So that's where the shiny side and the dull side comes from, because the dull side is the side that touched the other sheet of foil.
Oh.
And the shiny side is on the outside, so it wasn't touching anything when it was being stretched.
If I took two shiny sides of foil and rubbed them against each other, would they become duller?
You would make a horrifying sound.
Oh, I'll go get it. And
I think we're fine.
You don't think the listeners want that?
I wouldn't. This listener wouldn't like it. So that's, again, the dull side is the side that touched the other sheet of foil as it was like in that final stretch of being stretched, and the shiny side wasn't touching anything. There's a milling process. If you really want to watch it, it's very involved.
I will.
It just crushes it and thins it out and crushes it and thins it out. One ingot, which is, a really, really big piece of aluminum, that can make a roll of foil that is 12.7 kilometers long or 42,000 feet long. It's a lot. That tells you how thin it gets. It gets so thin, obviously.
Because I'm assuming this ingot is, well, massive, not like even a kilometer. It's probably
right.
Like,
no, it's a big, but it's not anywhere near that. No. And then of course it's cut down. But let's get back to the heat and the light and things like that. So both sides of the foil reflect light. There are three ways to transfer heat.
Great.
Can you name any of them?
Through the bank.
Mm-hmm.
You mail it.
Yep.
And then like a wire. Then transferring it like just through like a a quarantine, social distant kind of high. What please am I? Cut I'll me tell off.
You.
In me,
How would it. I tell you? Great. So there's conduction. That is, and I'm not. Don't do this. That's like when you put your hand on a hot curling iron.
Don't do that.
That's conduction.
Okay. Ouch.
There's convection, which is like putting your hand under a blow dryer.
Ouch.
And it gets hot. No, that's okay. That's all right. Yeah. And then there's radiation. So like when you get warm because you're standing out in the sun.
Ouch.
That's the radiation way of transferring heat.
So convection, radiation, conduction.
Conduction. Nice. So light is reflected by the foil. It's shiny metal on either side. So that radiant heat isn't being absorbed by the foil. It's reflecting. It's bouncing off. So it is, in fact, blocking that kind. But then the other two methods of heat transfer, which
convection
were?
Convection and conduction.
Uh-huh. Nice.
Which is the touch a hot thing and a hot thing blows on you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. The foil doesn't block that. So you still have those two ways of transferring heat to the food you're cooking.
So that's why if I wrapped a potato in foil, it doesn't come out just cold.
Right. It doesn't matter which side. It's not like the dull side like blocks all three ways.
Gotcha.
And the shiny side.
It's just blocking a form of
heat. It's just blocking a form. Okay. Right. So that's why it just doesn't matter if it's dull or if it's shiny. Doesn't matter. But it's a good reminder that we should reuse and recycle aluminum foil.
Oh, yeah.
Because sometimes you do need foil. For example, like if you're camping and you want to grill like a bunch of veggies in a little packet of foil, that's great. That sounds delicious. But other times you really don't need foil necessarily. For example, Kim, and do you know what we use when we make like cookies or when we roast vegetables and stuff in the oven?
We use like a reusable silicon.
A silicon mat. So we can use that again and again and wash it again and again. So we're not using foil
over and over.
We don't need to.
And I know you have in the past wrapped things in foil that weren't, it wasn't like ruining the foil or anything. And then afterwards you just either washed it or otherwise it wasn't even dirty and you just like folded it up and saved it.
Exactly. Yeah. Just clean it off. Dry it and then reuse it if you can. But you can also check with your city or your recycling service to see if you can recycle aluminum foil with them. Because in many places you can, you just have to get the food off of it first.
Okay.
Which is true of most recycling places. Again, you can check, but it does need to be clean. So it doesn't matter which side you use to heat up your food with aluminum foil, whether it's dull or whether it's shiny, because the heat's going to get through either way in two different ways. But once you've used that foil, try to reuse it. It's good for the environment.
Thanks, Margaret.
You're welcome, Camden. Over to you in the booth.
Thanks. Back in the booth. And Dad, hopefully that answers your question, because did we text him back?
I think so.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I think you did.
We'll text him this episode.
Let me see. Go ahead.
Well, Margaret.
Uh-huh.
It's time for your favorite snack.
Raw avocado?
Yeah. Well, it's green.
Broccoli? That's not my favorite snack. No,
and it's got a flossy texture, you once told me.
Oh, my least favorite snack is celery.
Margaret, what have people always told you? Or not just you. It's not like people are coming up on the street being like, did you hear this thing about celery?
Uh-huh.
What do people say about eating celery?
It tastes good.
The calories that
it
has in it.
You can dip it in ranch. What?
What do people say about the calories celery has?
Oh, they say it's one of those foods that have negative calories. You burn more calories eating it than you absorb by eating it.
Margaret,
does that make sense?
Welcome to Flavortown.
Flavortown, Columbus, Ohio, home of Guy Fieri.
So, my citations for this misconception about celery and the negative calorie effect it has.
Cameron's doing a wild amount of air quotes.
Lots. Is from, no more air quotes, because these are real. Science Focus, the BBC, Live Science, Carleton University, Time Magazine, article written by Dr. Nancy Snyderman, The Physiological Zoology, Journal and the Journal on the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. All right, let's first tackle what we know about celery. Margaret, what do we know about celery?
We know it is mostly water.
Yes, it is 95% water, and the other 5% is fiber.
Okay, that makes sense.
So people will often say...
And it shows.
And it does show. If you've ever had a good old snack on celery, it is a low-calorie snack. On average, a typical stick of celery has 6 to 10 calories in it. Obviously, the length and like width of the celery matters, but we can just say like average, a long stick of celery, 10 calories. Again, because it does have some fiber in it and not a lot of calories, it does have nutrients in it. And so people will, they are correct in that it is a low calorie snack and it will help with digestion because fiber is good for digestion and it has some antioxidants in it. So I will say like, I'm not here to tell you don't ever eat celery again. That's not my goal.
That's fine either way.
Sure. But
not to poo-poo people who love celery. I like celery. You love celery?
Celery. I love having celery and eating some celery.
Mm. Again, great for you if you like a good ants on a log. I just think it's so stringy. Anyway, sorry. Back to you, Kimden.
Thanks. In the booth. So according to Carleton University, fat generally requires less energy to process than protein or carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
But on average, you burn about 10% of the calories you eat through what is called the thermic effect of food.
Ooh.
When you hear thermic effect, what do you think of?
Heat.
Heat. Therm. Thermic effect of food or thermic energy in food is the energy your body uses to digest it, to absorb its nutrients, and to dispose of ingested nutrients.
Okay.
Again... On average, it's about 10%. Protein actually is a very complex molecule, so it takes like 20 to 30-ish percent of the energy to digest, absorb, and get rid of that food. Fats and carbohydrates are a little bit lower. But regardless, let's just say around 10% on an average here.
Okay.
So what that means is a 10% of a 10-calorie celery stick... How many calories then would it take for your body to digest it?
One.
Mm-hmm. Right away, this misconception is a misconception. It takes your body one calorie of energy to absorb the nutrients from the celery, digest it, and get rid of the celery.
Mm-hmm.
So where does this misconception come from then? If it's a 10 calorie thing and it only takes you a calorie to, you know, do your stuff with it.
So you still are intaking 9 calories.
You're still getting 9 calories out of it. So right. Where does this misconception come from? Well, Margaret, you're just sitting there.
I am.
Out of the booth.
Uh-huh.
Is your body using any energy just sitting there?
Yes.
It is. You at rest, all of us at rest, whether we think about it or not, even if someone says, oh, you have no energy, or you're like, I don't feel like I have any energy, your body is doing a tremendous amount of things just sitting there.
I'm respirating. Blood cells are heading out in all directions.
You are breathing. Great. Your blood's circulating.
Mm-hmm. You're digesting things probably still.
You're still digesting other things. You are an endothermic animal.
Thank you.
Which means... You have an internal body temperature that you maintain yourself. Are you getting weird? Oh, it's getting giggly. It's 8:30 here, so Margaret.
I'm tired.
Yeah. Your cells are growing. Your brain's working.
I'm so busy right now.
Your nerves are functioning. Your muscles are still contracting. Your body's doing an amazing amount of things.
Ugh, I'm exhausted.
In fact, you should be. You use about 60 to 75% of your daily caloric budget of all the calories you need, just sitting there or laying down or just being, which is a lot. Yeah. This is known as your basal metabolic rate.
Not basil as in the delicious herb on a pizza.
Basil as in base, like your base level.
Mm-hmm.
So just kind of like doing nothing, your body's at rest. you use about, on average, according to a research on 150 Scottish adults, about 1,500 calories a day just sitting there.
Wow.
Now, of course,
it varies. It varies totally by person. Varies. It varies. Yeah, sure.
Varies by person. They even note in this article, like, there were two people, they had everyone consume the same amount of calories, and they had different amounts of calories being burned off.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. People have different metabolic rates. Everyone's different. Yep. So I say 1,500. It is an average from scientific research, but clearly an average. And of course, this is just at rest. So moving around, exercising, eating more foods, all of this can affect how many calories you burn in a day. But the point here is that your body has to burn calories regardless of what you eat.
Right.
It just has to do that to hang out and be a body. So let's think about that. If you burn somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 calories a day, 1,500 calories a day on just resting, let's do some math. 1,500 calories at rest.
Okay.
We said we had a long celery stick that has about 10 calories in it. So you would need to eat 150 sticks of celery to get back your calories that your body is burning off. I don't know about you. I like a good chunk of celery. If you offer me 150 sticks, one, I'll say, where'd you get all those sticks of celery? Second, I'll say, I'm not going to eat all those.
Wait. So just as a clarification, I'm a bit confused because you said like you are still intaking, if a celery stick is 10 calories, I'm just burning one to eat it.
Yes.
So I'm still intaking 9 calories. But then on the other hand, you said too that it would take so many celery sticks to make up the calories that I'm just burning just being me.
So this is where the misconception comes from.
Okay.
You're nailing it.
Thank you.
Your body only uses about one calorie to burn off the, or to digest and use the celery stick.
Mm-hmm.
But in the background, it's burning hundreds and hundreds of calories.
I see.
And so when you put it in that context, yes, your body eats or burns off way more calories than that celery could provide you.
Mm-hmm.
However, it is also true, if you ate one hamburger, well, some hamburgers are more than 1,500 calories.
Yes.
But
Curd burger, for example, at Buffalo Wild Wings. I've never forgotten.
Please sponsor us.
I didn't have it, but.
I'll give a different example. If you ate, I don't know, what is like a piece of chocolate cake.
Mm-hmm. Good for you.
That maybe, you know, no one's going to call that a negative calorie food, but in the scope of, or in the grand scheme of the 1,500 calories on average, your body's just burning a day hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
It is similarly a negative calorie food if you're using that logic.
Mm-hmm.
So celery, anything under 1,500 calories at once, through this logic is a negative calorie food, which clearly is not the right way to go about this.
No.
So let's talk about this phrase, negative calorie food. In my research, many people, it took me a lot of digging to find when people weren't saying that celery, watermelons, grapes, other high water, high fiber foods.
Yeah. Rhubarb.
Are called negative calories. But like we've talked about here, anything under 1,500 calories through this same logic is a negative calorie food, which is clearly not the case. Yes, it takes less calories to burn off the energy from that food. That is always true. If you eat a hamburger, it takes less calories to burn it off than you ate. If you ate celery, it takes less calories to burn it off than you eat. You will always get
more. In the context of the calories that you're already burning in your life.
Of just that piece of food, it will always take less calories to use that food than it does to eat it.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
Always the case. Ignoring what your body's doing in the background.
Okay. Yeah.
Celery, pizza, hamburgers, a grain of rice, it will always take less energy because our bodies have evolved and our diets
really
have evolved
at it
to absorb energy from foods. It's just like not the case that we are looking for foods that have literally no caloric value to us.
Mm-hmm.
And they can give you energy, like when you eat them. Yes, low-calorie foods do have some nutrients in them, and they can make you feel full. Again, I'm going to end this here with saying, like, not bashing on celery, not bashing on grapefruits or watermelons. But unfortunately, there's a lot of things I was reading about that were all about how people were trying to make diets only off of peanut butter and celery, only off of like watermelon slushies. And like, of course, those are fine if you enjoy the taste of those things. But unfortunately, like you can't, I don't know, unfortunately, just it is what it is. You can't just eat those foods. You will be incredibly malnourished. Your diet, surprisingly, humans did not evolve off just a diet of celery or just a diet of plants. Even, and we've talked about this in other episodes, people like us who are vegan or vegetarian have to take other nutrients, have to find or enriched foods that are being enriched with some of the nutrients we might be missing.
Right.
You cannot just eat watermelon. You can't just eat celery. It's dangerous. You could become anemic.
There's you shouldn't
tons of health issues that could come from this. We talk about human evolution in our diets. Like in episode 26, when we talked about the book Human Errors, we talked about human lifespans and how humans have really not changed much evolutionarily speaking in over 100,000 years. And so if you think about an ancient human, and all of a sudden they run out of food, let's say they only have celery around, what is their body going to really not want to do?
Die.
Is gaining weight or losing weight good in the sense of dying? Like, does your body want to lose a bunch of weight?
No.
It does not. It is, when we think about ancient humans who may not have had a consistent meal like many of us who are privileged to have consistent daily meals have, your body does not want to lose weight. It is in a essentially a very scary situation as far as it thinks. When it starts to lose weight, it is never trying to do that.
Right.
Because if you think about our ancient human ancestors, losing weight meant you could die. And so if you eat only celery or you eat foods or you just try to get under that 1500 calorie limit, your body's metabolism will slow down so that it stops using that many calories.
Right.
Not to mention all the issues of being malnourished. You won't also just lose weight from like burning fat. Your body will start to lose muscle mass. It will start to eat away at things you don't want to lose. You'll lose brain mass.
Yeah.
It's super dangerous. So like this idea of like losing weight through this like method is incredibly dangerous. Of course, if you are like ever concerned about just like the nutrients you're getting, your general like health and diet, you should always consult a doctor.
Yeah.
Should also know the facts about how we've evolved, which is we've evolved to not lose weight. It's just the way our species has been around for hundreds of thousands of years. So all that to be said is,
and that's good. Like it's kept good. Us
yeah,
alive.
That's why
it's
we're
kept
here.
Us surviving.
It really doesn't want to fluctuate much. So maybe just keep that in mind when it's really important to have a well-balanced diet. If you love celery, eat celery. There's still nutrients in it. If you love watermelon, whatever. But this idea of it being negative calories or requiring more energy to eat than it has in it is a misconception.
Beautiful, Camden. Beautiful. Yeah, I will echo what Camden said. Like, talk to your doctor, but also talk to your doctor, though, before you, if you were to consider doing like a negative calorie diet. Like,
yeah.
Because I hope that your physician would say basically what Camden has said of like, this is not good for you. You do need to vary your diet.
And you can talk to nutritionists, people who clearly have like training in nutrition. You know, it is a growing field, and like our understanding of how the human body and diets, clearly the diet industry is a multi-million-dollar industry that preys upon this misconception of how our bodies actually work.
Yeah.
And when it comes down to it, our bodies don't like change. They worked really hard to maintain your temperature, your heart rate, your brain activity, your weight, nutrients, everything. Your body is very happy when it tries to stay the same.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm about to start reading a book by Christy Harrison, Anti-Diet. So I'm sure these things will be covered in there. But yeah, there's a lot that we don't understand. And there's a lot of purposeful misleading when it comes to diet. So consult your physician and make sure you have a physician that you like too.
Yep.
I'll just add that on there too. Nice job, Camden.
Thanks. So we're going to head into our final segment of every episode where we talk about something that we've been reading, listening to, watching, or otherwise consuming. Margaret, what you been consuming out there?
Well, over a weekend in Idaho, I had some time to read, and I read a great book, and I'm still reading this great book. Have I talked about this before? Maybe I have.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to still talk about it.
I mean, you've definitely put the British Bake Off like on this show four times.
Great.
So here we go again.
Good. It is a book called Benevolence, Moral Reform and Equality, Women's Activism in Kansas City, 1870 to 1940. And it's by esteemed author, Dr. David Hanslick.
No relation?
Relation,
all
in
relation.
Fact.
Oh, okay.
He's my dad. Oh. It's a really good book. It's a really great deep dive. He did so much research on it, which is both evident from this book and me observing him do research for many years about exactly what the book says, women's activism in Kansas City, the many forms it takes, the way that it shaped the city, and much more. So great read, great author.
Nice. Always worth another plug.
Mm-hmm.
I think we plugged some other things like Explain It Like I'm Five and How It's Made.
Mm-hmm. Great British Bake Off coming to Netflix September 25th.
I'm going to share.
I mean, that's off the top of my dome. I have memorized that. What does that say? I don't know.
I don't know what
it
says.
What are you consuming, Camden?
I've been consuming a daily newsletter curated by Nicole Cardoza called the Anti-Racism Daily.
Did you talk about this last week?
No.
Are you sure? Talk about it again. If you did, it's really important.
So this tagline is Daily Actions to Dismantle White Supremacy. Who cannot get behind that? It is what it says it is. It's a daily newsletter that gets sent to your email. And it's just about many topics related to dismantling white supremacy and anti-racism.
Mm-hmm.
It is a great newsletter. I love it because it is very like it can get very deep. They include a lot of things you can go into, but it starts very bite-sized. Like that's like the whole point of it. It always starts with a take action section and then a get educated section where they just give you a little bit of the history around the topic.
Mm-hmm.
And then they give you some really great graphics and things that you can share on social media called Share the Issue. And there's also tons of links within it of like where they're finding this research and where you can even read a lot more. Recently, some of the articles were about abolishing ICE. Like every time it's something different. Some other things have been around like supporting trans black women.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like scrolling through my emails, but it's always just like I read it in the morning. It's very quick. It just gives me something new to be thinking about every day.
And doing, it sounds like, too.
And doing, not just learning, but also doing. Although learning is a doing.
Learning
but
is
yes,
doing, yeah.
But taking action in many forms. Because Nicole, although this is free, you can have a subscription to it, like a $5 subscription through, I think they do PenPals. they do it through PayPal. They also do it through a couple other things. But basically, you can support that work too, which is really important.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just profit through the education for free. Mm-hmm. Give back. It's very affordable.
Pay.
Yeah, it's great. Antiracismdaily.com.
Thanks, Camden. And thank you all so much for listening today. If you liked this episode or any of our others, please rate us and leave us a quick review. Written reviews help new listeners decide if they want to give us a try. So help us out and help new listeners out by leaving a quick positive review.
You can hear more content like this from our Sister Wife podcast from U to O, hosted by my co-host, Margaret.
Don't Pee on Your Leg and Other Scientific Misconceptions is a podcast produced by Two Birds, One Scone. Articles, blog posts, and more about what you can do every day to conserve our environment can be found at twobirdsonescone.org.
Our theme music is by Camillo.
If you have a scientific misconception that you'd like explained or you want to provide feedback to us, please email us at don'tpeeonyourleg@gmail.com.
Have a great week.